and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivy podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I am so excited that you're here. Every week, I invite a girlfriend to join me on the show, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between. Today's show is sponsored by Mad Marketplace. Would you like to know how you can make a difference this Christmas while shopping? Mad Marketplace has created an online experience where you can do just that. With a simple vision of creating a global consumer movement that matters, you can take your shopping dollars and really put them to work to help others all around the world. There are more problems around us than there are solutions, and if you knew that your shopping for Christmas could help with issues of poverty, hunger, human trafficking, orphan care, and so many more, would you choose to buy differently and be a part of the solution? The mission of Mad Marketplace is to tell stories, sell products, and help people. We do so much shopping online, and Mad Marketplace wants to cater to that by creating a shopping experience that provides a wide variety of unique and practical products, tells the incredible stories behind each of them, and provides a simple way for everyone to help others. Mad Marketplace's products give back through buy one, give one, proceeds that participate in microlending, sustainable living wages, empowering women, meal for meal, drop for drop, and restoring hearing. No matter what you buy, guys, every purchase has a purpose. I love that. Mad Marketplace offers the consumer a different way to shop, a different reason to buy, and more than one way to help. With so many products to choose from, like peanut butter, baby blankets, coffee, lamps, statement jewelry, and rain boots, to name just a few, shoppers need to be ready to make a difference this Christmas. Go to themadmarketplace.com and change the way you shop. Right now, you can get 25% off with the code MADHAPPYHOUR25 code. Go to themadmarketplace.com. And guys, I know it's almost Christmas, or you may be listening to this after Christmas. You can still shop there and make a big difference. Guys, if you are listening to this live today, it is almost Christmas. And I can't even believe that because I'm moving this week, which equals chaos. But you know what I've thought about this week is that although I have not baked one single cookie this Christmas season, my family has read Advent twice. We haven't given one thing to our neighbors. We don't have stockings up. We don't have a tree up. We haven't done any of this because we're moving. But I thought about it yesterday, and it doesn't change the fact that Jesus was still born, that he still came to earth to put on flesh for us, to bring us back to God. And so I hope that in this Christmas season, it may not be joyful for you. It may be a really hard season, but I hope that you still remember that no matter what you're feeling, the truth is still the same, that Jesus loves you and he came for you. So I just want to remind you of that this Christmas season. Guys, today you're listening to episode number 68, and my guest is Jamie Nado. And Jamie and I met over the internet after a mutual friend, Emily Lex, who is from Jones Design. And you may remember, if you're a longtime listener, she was on episode 42 and 43 because we talked for so long. Emily introduced us, and I fell in love with Jamie immediately. And I promise that today you're going to fall in love with her as well. She's so real, honest, raw, and vulnerable in our discussion about marriage and what God did in her marriage through infidelity. Even if you're not married, this show is going to be so good for your soul. So I encourage you to take some time to listen to it. If you're like me and you want to send us a tweet during the show because you want to tell us something, send us a tweet. We'd love to hear from you. My Twitter account is at Jamie_Ivy. And it's Jamie_Ivey. And Jamie's, she doesn't have an E on the end of her name. It's Jamie Nato 1. So JamieNato1. And you can find us there on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. All right, guys, here is episode number 68 of my chat with my friend Jamie Nado. Enjoy. Good morning, Jamie.
What's up?
We're meeting for the first time ever.
I know, it's kind of weird.
So I think the first person that told me I should have you on is Shannon Martin.
She's pretty okay.
I'm claiming her as a friend now.
She's pretty okay.
And then I just saw that you were on Jessica Thompson's podcast.
Yes.
And I love her.
I am obsessed with her, so I hate to one-up you.
I've never met her in person. She's been on the show.
So funny. Their family is so funny.
And I knew I was going to like you, though, because I went to your blog, and your very second sentence says, "One thing you should know about me is that I cuss sometimes, but I really love Jesus."
I forgot that's on there. Maybe that's a little too abrasive as a first.
It's the second sentence, but then the third says, "I don't pretend to have it all together."
Right.
Maybe that's why we need Jesus. And I'm like, I like her.
Well, I think if you're going to come to the blog, and I guess that's why that's in my about section. If you're going to come to my blog and expect some super amazing Christian with a lot of incredible insights for your crafternoon, then I just don't want to disappoint people. And sometimes, you know, if you tell people up front, like, hey, I'm a cusser, then it's not as surprising, you know, when I drop one.
Oh, I love it so much. Here's a funny story for you about cussing. I was at a women's retreat this weekend and said the S word, not sex, not stupid. Those are bad words that my kids say the S words are.
Right.
I said the S word.
No.
In the ladies retreat.
Wait, on stage?
Yeah. With a microphone in my hand. It was a very poor choice. That's what happens when I go off my notes. When I speak, you'll see it's word for word because I don't trust myself without that. And clearly I have proved myself that that is true. I should not be trusted. Now I'll tell you this, cause I told Aaron and he's like, did you really do that? Like, come on, get yourself together. But it was in an example and it was a really good example. After I told him, he's like, oh, okay, that's really good. So it wasn't just like, I just kind of was like, oh, and then said it.
Was it – now, what was the crowd reaction? Was there a gasp or –
Well, what happened was I was like – I was starting to tell the example and then my brain started going, stop, Jamie, stop, stop, stop. This is not going well. And so I kind of stopped in the mid and I was like, okay, I'm not going to tell this example. You know, I'm sorry. I was about to say something inappropriate. And they all looked at me like, no, keep going. And so I just kept going and they laughed. And so, and then I left and they'll probably never ask me back again, but that's what happened, you know.
Let someone else do the cleanup crew on that.
Walk out.
You drop the mic and you walk out and then you let other people deal with that. That's my life motto. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we can be friends.
Yep. That's what happened there. But that's how I knew that I was going to like you. Okay. So welcome to the happy hour.
What's up?
Thanks for coming on my show. Tell everybody, like, if someone's like, who's Jamie Nado?
Oh.
Besides someone that cusses a little and loves Jesus a lot.
Right.
Who are you? What do you do in life? What's your world?
Okay. It's complicated like everyone's story, but I have four kiddos. I have been married for 10 years, and I write a little. I'm like entrepreneur for another company. So I kind of split my time doing both of those things. And this year is the first year I changed from being a stay-at-home mom for 10 years. And then this year I needed to get some stuff done. I'm writing a book and I was like, I cannot finish this book by stealing 30 minutes here and there because the subject matter I feel like is just too intense. It's like a lot of emotions and I have to kind of dig deep. And so stealing 30 minutes here and there was just not working for me. So I prayed about it, talked about it for a long time and came to the conclusion that I really felt like God has been asking me to write a book for a while. And I kept saying, I feel like it's rude of you to ask me this, God, when you haven't provided.
Rude.
I can't do this. Like, I can't write a book full time, run this company that kind of funds everything for this book, and then also be a full time mom. That's like three full time jobs, and I feel like he wasn't making a way. Mm-hmm. And then during the summer, as I kind of struggled through that, just a bunch of things happened and we decided I'm going to take this year or however long it takes and just really buckle down, focus. So I work 40 hours a week from home, have a nanny, eat my words all day long. And I'm doing it. I'm doing the thing, which is, I don't know what, I just feel like I wake up every day and I'm like, am I doing the right thing? Like, what is going on in my life? It's hard when you feel called to do something. It doesn't mean it's easy, you know, or that you won't ever doubt yourself. And sometimes I forget that. I think if you're called to do something, you should just be able to sprint through it, and it should be rainbows, unicorns, chocolate chip cookies all day long. And I'm learning it's a bit tougher than that.
Yeah, don't we wish it was just like unicorns and rainbows and chocolate chip cookies?
Mm.
But then we would just do the things that were just easy for us.
So easy. It's, I tell people the most growth that I've ever seen in my life the most change for the better has always been in super uncomfortable moments. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those moments are literal moments, and sometimes they are, you know, a longer period of time, a year, a couple of years. And, but that's, I think, I don't really want to do this because it's hard for me, and I don't, and it's going to challenge me. So I have this thing in the back of my head that's like, if you're going to fail, then just don't even try.
Yeah.
And maybe that's everybody. Maybe that's a voice in everybody's head, but it's pretty loud for me. And so
is
tough.
And really what that is like pride, because we're like, I'm going to save myself, because if there's a chance that I could fail, then my pride will keep me from doing it because I don't want to look like a failure.
Complete self-protection. Uh-huh. Yeah. Pride. I am a self-protector. I know that about myself. So it's good for me, and God does it time and time again because he loves me, not because he's, you know, here's another challenging situation, because I'm mean. He is
rude.
Rude. He gives me these opportunities to see him more, and I'm so stubborn, and I love comfort so much that that's just the story of my life. Uncomfortable situations, I'm awkward, and then, you know, so that doesn't help anything. And then I have these big things that I have to do that challenge me so far beyond myself, which means a lot of leaning on God.
I think that we're walking in the same world right now.
It's good to know I'm not alone.
You're not alone. Okay, I want to hear more about your book, but I want to hold that off for a minute because what I first want to tell you is I feel like I owe everybody in Kansas City a congratulations.
And you totally do. Thank you.
I mean, this show is going to be airing a long time after y'all won because we're going to be well into December when this comes out. But let's not forget, if you're listening, about the World Series.
Don't forget about it, because I guarantee you that by Christmas time, Kansas City will have not forgotten, and perhaps our city spirit might be even greater.
So tell me, have you always been a Kansas City fan?
No, I grew up in Texas. Don't tell anyone, but where? I grew up in Texas. So a little tiny town called Amarillo, right in the panhandle.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
It's just a luscious, garden area.
Yes. It's like, here's the thing about the panhandle, and people from Texas will think this funny. No one remembers the panhandle exists. It's like all of Texas. Yeah. And they're like, oh yeah, I think there's some cities up there.
Right. Oh, is that Oklahoma?
And right.
We're still part of you guys. Please be our friend.
Hey, well, first, I need to call you out on this, because if people are from Texas, they're proud of it. Why are you not proud of this?
Well, now I have seen the error of my ways. No, I do love Texas. It's just that you don't know it, but there's a lot of Texas. God, I don't want to say arrogance because I don't want to.
It's true.
I don't want to make people angry, but you know, they're very prideful about where they come from and how they do things. And so I had grown up like that. And then when you have to move and you're the new kid and you're thrown into a new environment, say maybe you move from Texas to Kansas, and it gets
you
real.
Think Texas is all there is. You think there's no other states here except for us.
Right. I'm like, oh, you guys exist?
Right.
You're just kind of arrogant, and nobody likes that. So I kind of learned the hard way.
That is so funny, because I've lived in Texas almost my whole life, but I lived in Tennessee for 5 years out of my life. That's it. Otherwise, I've been here in Texas. And I learned when I went to Tennessee that nobody has the Tennessee flag tattooed on their body.
No.
Nobody has it, like, on walls in their homes. Like, nobody does that.
No one.
And people, it's a very, here, it's, yeah, it's as if we're our own country. We know this.
You Texas all know people, that. Yeah. And that's the thing. You know it, and you secretly just love it so much. And you're so proud of it.
And I want to throw this on as well. I'm in Austin, and I think that us Austin people think that there are no other cities in the state.
Right. Which, that might be true if I had to pick a place, you know.
I think it's true. But then again, I think Austin's the best city in the whole country. And so there I go again.
Which is so awkward for you because it's Kansas City and then you just don't know that yet. But I think after the World Series situation, 800,000 people just showed up.
I saw that.
They planned for 100,000. 800,000 showed up. We had no riots, no stampedes. three people got arrested for something that's minor or whatever. And that was it. Like, that was
y'all crazy have some good stuff. People is what you're saying.
It's basically the best. There's a lot of, I will say, even, I don't know what it was, but a couple years ago, Kansas City, we became very excited about our city and really proud to be here. And people, I don't know, individually, but separately, maybe, as an introvert would say, but together, but separately, we kind of, everybody kind of did their part. We started loving the city. We kind of all had our own causes, and we kind of just started working together across lines. There's a lot of lines in our city, and it's been like that for a long time. And so people just started coming together. So this happened. This was starting to happen before the Royals. The Royals have been pretty rotten over the years.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not been, but, you know, you just stick it out. And so we had been, you know, really excited about our city. And then the Royals kind of just tied us all together with a nice, pretty blue bow. So I think nobody wanted, we don't want to tear up our city. We love our city. We're trying to make it a better place, you know, as nerdy as that is to say.
No, it's nobody not.
Wants to tear up their city.
No, it's just a pride in where you are and a pride in your people. And I love that. And I told you in a text that I became a Royals fan for the World Series. Like, you have to pick a team. I mean, it doesn't matter who you like. Right. And that's who I was going for because of you and then one of the players' wives that I follow on Instagram, which I think is kind of weird, the world that we live in, that you follow people on Instagram and then you cheer for their husband's team.
Right.
That's weird.
It's so natural.
Yeah, right? And so I was cheering for you guys the whole time. So let me tell you what happened in game five. It was five, right? Yeah, game five. That's all it went to, right?
Right.
Yeah, so game five on a Sunday night. My husband works all day on Sunday, so he comes home and I'm watching the game, like, because it's the World Series, and that's when I watch baseball, is World Series. Right. That's it. And so I'm watching the game. Y'all are down 2-1, and he comes in and he's like, do we seriously have to watch this? And we have one TV in our house that, like, plays, that works without, right, like, a DVD. So we have one TV. And so I decide, well, they might lose. There'll be another game. I'll be the good supportive wife. You've been working all day. You can watch Last Man on Earth. Which, are you watching that show by any chance? Last Man on Earth?
I'm not, but I've heard so many good things about it.
Really funny. So we start watching that. It's over. We're about to go to bed. He turns back to TV and y'all are up like 9-1. What was the final score?
I don't even know because I was out in my street.
Okay, so y'all were up, and I saw the very last two batters, and I was so mad at Aaron. I was like, I cannot believe what you made me miss.
It was so good. It was so beautiful.
I mean, at the end of the day, who cares? We don't live in Kansas City. I'm not, like, a huge fan, but still, right. I was just like, this would have been such a fun game to watch, and instead I've been watching this.
Everybody likes a good game.
I love a good game. I don't care who's playing.
Everybody likes a good game. Everybody likes the underdog. Everybody likes the team that should not have won, you know, and then they kill it. And they do it at, you know, we always look like we're losing and then pull it together. It's just such a good story.
It was a fun team to watch in the World Series. So kudos to you guys in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Proud of y'all.
Good city.
Proud of y'all. Yes. Okay. Okay. Let's talk about your book that you're writing because I think that I'm guessing, I'm going to just go out on a limb here because I don't know what you're writing a book about, but I'm guessing it's what I want to talk to you about. So am I right?
Yeah, I don't know, but let's
go
there. Let's get there. I am writing a book about, my husband had an affair a couple years ago, like 7 years ago. And we were super Christians. We were like the A-team Christians and pretty amazing. And for the Lord, he needed us. And so we were these awesome churchy people and we were doing all the things and on all the teams and all the accountabilities and reading all the books and et cetera, et cetera. I won't bore you with our incredibleness.
Well, I mean, it sounds just like the best Christians for sure.
You should feel bad about yourself. so we were just, I don't know, trudging along in our Christianity, I would say. And my husband had this kind of secret life happening, and it didn't go on for very long. I mean, we're talking a couple months. Mm-hmm. And praise the Lord for that. Right. And it kind of just, it destroyed me. it destroyed him for sure. But for me, as a person that really found a lot of identity in being a good Christian and a, you know, doing a lot for the Lord. And so he kind of owed me, like, you know, no suffering. Mm-hmm. And so I just, I hit the bottom. I hit the bottom really, really quick. And no one even believed me when I was saying, you know, this is, something's wrong in our marriage. I mean, a lot of people just, because my husband was such a good liar and he was in all the things. And I mean, you would just never believe.
So you had this feeling, like this, we'll call it gut, Holy Spirit, whatever it was. You had this feeling that something's off.
Something was way off.
Okay. And, but did you express this to your husband?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. I'm a very outspoken person. Mm-hmm. But we had just had a baby. He had just taken a new job. There were so many transitions going on that I decided to just kind of let some of it go because I didn't want to be that wife that hung on to every, you know, fought every battle and hung on to every little thing and all of that. But it got pretty bad, as in, like, he was not sleeping at our house every other night. But he works like a trauma job. Mm-hmm. And so that it was kind of that it's not
abnormal.
It's not crazy. And he had a pager and all this stuff.
Okay.
So it's not like super crazy, but I think, you know, when something's off, and I just felt it. So I tried to tell people, you know, something feels weird about this. And we also just changed churches. We had been there for 6 months. And so, you know, you're kind of telling this to newish friends.
Yeah. Hey, we're the new people. And I think my husband's having an affair.
Right.
Yeah.
And we look like super Christians. So you'll never believe this.
Right.
But our marriage, something's weird with our marriage. And I never said like, he's having an affair with another woman. Mm-hmm. I did use the language, like, I feel like he's having an affair, but it's with his job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, something in me knew that his heart was not all mine.
Yeah.
And his relationship with God was just off as well. And there were just so many red flags. So by the time everything became public, people had sort of known at that point that we were in a rough spot, but nothing you couldn't just, you know, kind of talk about with friends and work through is what everyone was thinking, like, oh, your marriage will be fine. We'll just have a couple meetings and we'll have you over for dinner and we'll kind of just talk you down from the ledge. But I was a mess. I mean, I'm crying at people's dinner tables and I'm...
Is this after you knew that it was actually an affair with a woman?
Before. This was before.
Okay.
I have never been great at not being quiet.
Okay.
So I was telling people and no one. I mean, I told my parents. I told, you know, our friends. I told our small group. Mm-hmm. And no one really believed me. Those were kind of hurtful moments in that. When I look back, that does sting a little for a person who values having a voice and loves to help others have a voice. You know, that got taken away from me.
So looking back, what do you wish would have happened when you had those vulnerable conversations with friends saying, hey, something's off, something's weird?
You know, I also give a generous assumptions about that people – you only know what you know. And he played such a great game on that. He just was he was just incredibly deceitful. He's very charming. I still say now when if you would watch him in a crowd or at church or anything, it legitimately looks like he's running for office. Like, he is shaking.
He's just one of those people.
Oh, so it has holding somebody's baby, taking a package out to their car. I mean, he's just like, sometimes I can't find him. And there he is, like, chatting with people outside the church. And I'm like, I will hurt you right now in your face.
Yeah. So you're expressing this and people are just like, it doesn't add up because they see your husband. Yeah.
They're like, hey, this is a really rough spot. Like, that makes sense that this would be rough. You guys just had a baby. He's kind of figuring out his job.
New job, new baby, new church. Yeah.
So that, you know, it's not it wasn't that. And when everything did come out, I mean, people were incredible. Mm-hmm. It's just, there is, as a self-protector, when I look back on that, I think nobody protected me. And which is not true, but if you kind of grow up doing that, and that's kind of your mantra that no one will protect me, so I must protect me. Mm-hmm. And then when you can't do that for yourself, it's very, I mean, that was part of my fall. That was part of what hurt so bad when I fell so far down.
Yeah.
And not to say, that was incredible for me. That was very good for me. But yeah, I mean, things you can do for people when they are expressing concern, particularly in marriage, is believe them. Mm-hmm. You know, just give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, yeah. So let's keep moving with this, because you keep saying something that I want you to tell us a little bit more about. And you keep saying, I hit rock bottom when I fell, all of this stuff. And there's someone listening that's like, how'd you hit rock bottom? You weren't the one having an affair.
I also said that to the Lord, mm-hmm. Right to the face.
Like, why am I hurting so bad? Why exactly. am I hitting rock? Not suffering, because that's suffering, someone losing that trust with someone. Right. But you're talking about it as if God changed you through this.
Right.
And so tell me, and people that are listening that are thinking, you didn't do anything wrong. What did you have to change?
Yeah. Why is God working on you?
Right.
I do try to, when I speak about this, I do try to focus on what God was doing in me, because my husband is already the villain. I think when people look at our marriage story and perhaps when they're hearing about it or whatever, he's already made out to be this villain, the guy that did the wrong thing, and then I'm the victim. And I mean, that's how we kind of characterize stories in our head to make them make sense. Like, I totally get that. But I really do try to focus on what God was doing in me, because one, I'm not responsible for my husband or what the change that's happening in him. Mm-hmm. And I can't speak to that story completely. I watched him change, and that was beautiful. But I don't know the ins and outs of that, what was happening for him. I do know the ins and outs of what was happening in my heart. So that's what I generally try to focus on. As a super Christian and as someone who thought they were valuable based on what they did and their behavior, when something bad happened to me, despite my behavior, mm-hmm. because I felt like I was doing the 10 steps to affair proof my marriage. Like, I was doing all the things. We were very involved. I felt like we're doing, mm-hmm. we had accountability. Mm-hmm. We had rules. We had boundaries. We, everything.
And so then when it happens to you, then you're like, why are you doing this to me, God? I am obeying you.
Right. So there was some entitlement there that I had to work through. Like, I'm not sure. And so in that question I asked God is, I don't understand why you're choosing to work on this stuff with me now at the most low point of my life when I didn't do the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And so that question is basically pointing to entitlement, and why is this happening to me is a great, if anyone's listening and you ask that question a lot, working through what are you owed? And for me, I learned what I was owed was death and separation from Christ. And he saved me. And so I got life. Now, that doesn't mean I get anything else guaranteed for me. Mm-hmm. But my soul gets to be with Jesus. There's no separation there. And that's what I learned in the low point is, that's all I have. This is all I have. This is all that's guaranteed for me. Everything else can get taken away, which did. I mean, I was looking, I'm not going to be a stay-at-home mom anymore. I love staying at home with the kids. I'm not, because I'd have to work. Mm-hmm. I mean, I focused on his career for so long. I mean, we were building up his career, and so I'm staying at home, and we're making a bunch of sacrifices, and And then all of a sudden I'm looking at going back to work, and I had no training. I just felt like I would have to go back and get recertified. I would have to, there was so much that what that meant for me. Mm-hmm. And so it was the bottom for me. That is how God brought me low, but that was how I experienced the gospel in a tangible way. Mm-hmm. And that was how I realized that the gospel is not a hurdle to jump and then you become a Christian. And then here's this book called the Bible, and it's mm-hmm. full of rules, and you just do these things and then...
And you're good.
And you're like, that means you're a Christian. And that was not what it meant. The gospel then became something I clung to every second of my day to get through the next minute. I mean, I needed the cross. I needed Jesus. I needed his death. I needed him to help me walk to the shower and get in there. Like, I needed him to help me. I was so skinny. I just felt like I was wasting away, but food wasn't like my first. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes, you know, people go in that direction. I'll eat more and fill up. I just didn't think about it. I wasn't having a problem or, you know, anorexic situation. I legitimately, it was not, it didn't cross my mind. And so I would set an alarm so that I would eat lunch. So at noon, I would make my phone beep so that I would remember to go and methodically, mechanically chew a half of a sandwich. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, that's how, and that was, Lord, help me get this sandwich down. I mean, that's how much I needed Jesus. Yeah. Now, before, I only needed him to bring me good things mm-hmm. or help me find a parking spot or, before I needed him, when I needed him, he was my genie in a bottle. And then, you know, this all happened and I needed a miracle.
So would you say boldly that you're thankful for this?
You know, I've always said that, and I get a lot of feedback. People don't like hearing that. Mm-hmm. But I had said that from the very beginning. I'm really grateful that God chose to love me in this way. Mm-hmm. I wasn't angry. That wasn't my response. It was a lot of other things, but I wasn't angry at God. I just needed him so much. There mm-hmm. was no even room for me to be mad, and I didn't have enough emotional energy actually to be mad at anything else. I was already mad at my husband, but so yeah, I've always said I've been super grateful for that because it changed my life.
Yeah, for sure. And I can think of so many other situations of people that I have and myself personally walked through stuff, and I would say I wouldn't change anything. I mean, it was hard to walk through, and I wish I wouldn't have had to. But because I walked through that, I need Jesus more. I say that with my parenting. Like, God's given me some kids that are difficult. Before I had those kids, I was like pro-parent. I mean, I could do seminars. Parenting was a breeze.
Do you guys want me to write a book?
Right, exactly.
Do you need like...
Yeah, and then I get some kids that are difficult. And so then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, I actually need you, Jesus. I thought I knew how to do this life thing.
Right.
And so I think about that all the time, you know. Okay, so Jamie, when you... This all sounds amazing. I mean, how many years out are you?
7.
7 years out. I'm grateful for this. I love Jesus more, blah, blah, blah. But what about that first month?
When I found out?
Yeah. I mean, what did that first month look like? How did you – I guess my question is for – no doubt there are people listening that have walked through your shoes. And especially no doubt people are listening that will encounter this. What did that first month look like? Did you realize your need for Jesus that much then?
I had already, since I felt like my marriage was going downhill, no one was listening to me, and my husband was gone.
Absent.
I mean, mm-hmm. absent, literally. And then, like, even conversations, I was like talking to a stranger. Mm. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. I was alone. So for 2 months leading up to that, and kind of that last month before everything happened, I was so alone and and had nobody was listening or believing me. And I started then needing Jesus. And I look back on that time and think that he drew me into him so near. I always think of things like visually. I'm more of a creative minded person. And so I think of that time as like being on a beach, the clouds are coming, it's dark, you know, a storm's coming, you can hear the rumbling. Mm-hmm. And I look at that time as God holding my hand and leading me into the cleft of kind of a deep rock that will not be moved in the storm no matter what came. God drew me into the, and I knew the storm was coming. Mm-hmm. And he was kind to say little whispers here and there that said, like, I'm going to need you to get in close. Mm. And I mean, tender, tender moments, which of course I'm going to cry. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I don't sleep, but with all these children, they're so naughty. But tender, tender moments where God, I mean, that was my first real moment of needing him. And so that tender, tender time of him leading me into the rock. And from then on, because the storm did come and mm-hmm. it was bad, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. I knew I could trust him. Mm. He had done that. And I knew, you know, if he was kind enough to bring me into this cleft, and I felt like I was really rooted. I felt like we were on some kind of roller coaster and everyone was in the roller coaster, but I was the only one buckled in. I mean, everyone was freaking out. Everyone was mad and angry and working through all their stuff. And I was watching it around me, like everyone was flying out of the roller coaster and I was buckled in. And I don't know how else to describe it, but because God had already brought me in mm-hmm. before the storm, mm-hmm. throughout the storm, I remained very, very close to Jesus through that. And I'm jealous of myself during that time because I was so close. God is near. He said that he's near to the brokenhearted. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that's a promise. His nearness was so real. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just felt like he was with me every night next to me in my bed. Like I felt like I could feel his breath on me. Mm. So those were tender moments mm-hmm. that I look back on and want again for myself. Which is awful to say because, you know,
it came with the suffering.
It came with the mm-hmm. suffering. Not to say, you know, even after all of our marriage stuff, there's no guarantee that your life isn't hard again. And we have a special needs kiddo. And, you know, that's just another mm-hmm. way we get to practice what we learned in our other shit storm, as I call it. Bleep that out. But
we'll leave it.
You know, that's the only way we describe it is a shitstorm because we feel like it should offend you. I feel like that should offend you when I say that. It should be abrasive because that was what was happening in my life. Mm-hmm. And there's no other word that kind of says what we were going through. So that month was difficult. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a lot of just getting through 1 minute at a time. That was what I did.
I always think, I just taught about this weekend, about suffering. And one of my favorite scriptures, it says, you know, rejoice in your suffering because suffering produces endurance and endurance produces character and character produces hope, which will not put us to shame. Mm. And I always think about that. And I have found myself lately very timidly being like, God, I really want to make it to the end. Like, I want to persevere. I want to endure. I want my character to be so like, I want all of these things. And your word says that we can rejoice in our suffering because they produce that.
Right.
So God, I'm willing. It's hard to say. I'm willing to walk through whatever it is that's going to produce that in me. And that's a very scary thing to say. And I think that's a very easy thing for me to say right now because I'm not in a season of suffering. And so I think I want to say it now so that I can really, really hope to believe that when I am. Does that make sense?
Right. I mean, that's the tension we live in. Mm-hmm. It's just the tension that we're in on this side of heaven. Like, it's the tension we're in. And the only way you can really, as a human, be close to God, aside from some supernatural gift that he gives you in a moment here and there, is deep, deep suffering. I mean, I really believe that. It's the only way that you will know how near he is.
Yeah.
And so would I ever change anything? No. Mm. Would I wish that my husband never cheated on me? Absolutely not. Mm. I am just so thankful for the gift that it gave me. If it was only for nearness to Christ, if I never got my marriage back, that was not the reward. Mm. The reward was nearness to Christ.
That'll preach right there, Jamie.
That's how I learned it.
Yeah.
You can't just say that. I feel like deep calls to deep. And when you hear that, your soul says yes, because I'm not faking it. That's not a lie. That's not a posture. That's someone who's experienced deep suffering and has seen some things, you know, those people know the face of Jesus. Mm.
So once you get past, once God is bringing this revelation to you about your need for him and bringing you so near to him and bringing you in, that's just beautiful to think about him bringing you in before that storm started raging. I mean, the storm, it was raining already, you know.
It was.
And then the storm came and you were so near and boldly you say, if I never get my marriage back, I'm so near to God. But by the grace of God, you did get your marriage back.
Right.
How did walking in forgiveness and reconciliation, and how did all of that look for you guys?
That was also supernatural. I think if it's hard to explain, but if a lot of people ask me for help on this, you know, my husband cheated on me, or my husband's addicted to pornography or whatever. Some people have some super, super deep hurts, and I don't have like the best answer for that, except that when all that stuff happened, there was a verse on our chalkboard that had been up for like months. I mean, I had a newborn, and so, you know, you write something on a chalkboard and then you leave it for 4 years.
Exactly.
There was my Pinterest moment 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So I had this verse up on my board that said, be tenderhearted towards one another and forgive each other like Christ forgave you. Something to that extent. I will mess that up. I surprisingly don't have the Bible memorized. And
what?
It's a shocker. I know. But that verse was on the board, and I remember I'm crying, and I look up, and that verse is on there, and I thought, like Christ forgave me. Mm-hmm. Okay, how did Christ? Then I thought about it. How did Christ forgive me? And the other verse came to mind was, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. And that meant before we had an apology, before we knew that we did something wrong, before we got our act together, before we noticed that we were drowning mm-hmm. and sinking and playing in the mud, mm-hmm. before we even knew that, he said, I pick you. Mm-hmm. And God just did something in my heart to where he said, you know, I've given you so much grace. Now, what will you do with it? And because I had been given so much grace, it was a little bit easier to extend that much grace. Mm-hmm. If you don't recognize that you need help and that you are just as awful as a person who sinned against you, it's very, very difficult to forgive someone wholeheartedly, 100%, like God asks us to, because that has to be a supernatural work.
Yeah.
God has to say, here's your dark, dark heart, which God did for me. He said, hey, look at your husband. That's you. Mm-hmm. You whore after approval.
Perfection. Pride.
Sin. Yes. You whore after so many things mm-hmm. every minute of your day. And I say, I choose you. Mm-hmm. And so because that was the painful part of the whole thing, God was dealing with me on my entitlement, my reputation, my idols. I am pleading for forgiveness. And then after he deals with me kindly in that way, gently in that way, says, now what will you do with this husband of yours? Mm-hmm. And I had no, I had nothing except I was compelled to forgive him. Mm-hmm. Even in his sin, even when he was still lying to me, there was a time, I mean, he had been caught and he still was continuing in his sin a little bit, and which is totally normal that you just got ripped out of your sin and then everyone expects you to be completely changed. Mm-hmm. But you didn't want to repent.
Right. You just got caught.
Which is like, AKA, let's look at our parenting.
Exactly.
We expect our kids like, oh, now you got caught. That's like the, let's flip the switch. Uh-huh. And when really we should plead with our children. Like, I know it's so hard. The only way you can change is that God would change your heart. Go up to your room and ask that God would change you. I mean, instead we say, be patient. And then that's what we give our kids. And that's what we give our spouses. And that's, we give them commands that they cannot fulfill aside from God doing a work in their heart. And so that's what I had to work through. Forgive someone who doesn't even want it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they didn't even ask for it. Yeah. And God's like, what will you do? How did I forgive you? Oh, well, I was still sinning. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so that's what I did. It was like a full-time job. I mean, anytime anything came to my mind, I was working through that. I again, as a visual person, I looked at God handing me a big giant hand from the sky, and he would hand me something, and it could be awful timing, like I'd be in the middle of the grocery store, and something comes to my mind, or, you know, you want to have a pretend conversation with someone, and that never happened, or maybe that did happen, and here's what you wish you would have said. We all have those conversations, but, you know, in the Target aisle, and God's like, here's the thing I want you to work on right now. I looked at it as an intentional, it was permissive, it was permitted for me right in that moment, and God says, here's what I want you to work on. So instead of slapping his hand away, mm-hmm, or trying to fix it, I would say, Lord, that really hurts. That's awful. And that makes me feel like completely unvaluable. Mm. And so I would just name how it made me felt. And then I would usually just say out loud, even in the Target aisle, I'm yelling to a can of beans.
Uh-huh.
And I would say, I forgive you for, you know, getting naked with someone else. Like sometimes something would just haunt me, like a visual or whatever, and it would just haunt me. And finally, I would get mad. That's enough. And now I'm forgiving.
Mm.
And so I would say, I forgive my husband for that moment that he did that and was intimate with someone else and called our marriage stupid. And then when it would come back up again in the next aisle, I would say the same thing over and over and over again until it left me alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that was just my full-time job. That was my full-time job for a month, working through tiny, tiny moments. And they just didn't have power over me anymore,
mm-hmm,
until when my husband finally did come home. I didn't need to work through every single hurt with him. Not to say he didn't deserve it. He for sure deserved all that. And we did lots of work. But, you know, it just wasn't. I had already worked through those things with God. So I didn't need my husband to pay.
I'm telling you, this is like the gospel. I mean, and this is so anti the world, because the world is saying, Jamie, you don't owe him anything.
No.
He has hurt you. He has looked at your marriage and said, this doesn't matter. You can forgive him, but you don't have to love him or pursue any of this. And then you're like, but actually, this is the gospel. And my favorite thing you've said so far today is that even if I did not get my marriage back, that I was near to God.
Right.
And I have not, in my marriage, I have not personally been affected by an affair. But in relationships very close to me, I have, and it has hurt me, and it didn't even happen to me. Okay.
Right.
So the ripples of affairs go very wide, which no one realizes when they're in the midst of it. Right. They just think it is going to affect themselves.
Right.
But early on in our marriage, and I'm telling you this to tell you how much God has changed me as a wife, early on in our marriage, I looked at Aaron and I said, if you ever cheat on me, I'll never forgive you and I'll never stay with you.
Absolutely.
And here I am, pastor's wife, and I'm looking at my husband and saying, this is the thing. This is it.
Right.
And he literally, like, it upsets me now because he looked at me with the most like I had hurt him so deeply. Right. And he was like, that's the meanest thing you've ever said to me. And I'm thinking, are you freaking kidding me? Like, if you cheat on me, you don't deserve this forgiveness.
Right.
So God has been working in my life for years. And just literally in the past 6 months, did I come to this like awareness, because I think I have seen my marriage that I want to be the perfect wife and I want to love Aaron so well so that he'll never cheat on me.
Oh, right.
So I'm serving him and loving him, not for God, not for our marriage, but just so like he doesn't need to find a better offer, right?
Well, yeah, protect yourself.
Protection, exactly. And over the past 6 months, it's like God has been like chiseling me away through outside circumstances and inside circumstances of like, Jamie, you don't love Aaron so that he won't leave you. You love Aaron because of how much I have loved you.
Yes.
And you don't get to not forgive someone. So everything you've been saying, I'm like, this has been the journey that God's even taken me personally on. And I haven't even walked through what you've walked through. But just to look at my marriage is not something that is for me, not right. something that I deserve, not something to make me feel good.
Right.
But to look at it as like a part of the gospel. And so who am I to tell Aaron, if you do this one thing, I'll never forgive you.
Yeah. And I did the same thing. I think a lot of people do that. And I think you're saying it to your husband. I think you're saying it to God. You know, this is the thing that
don't
I
don't do this
for.
Yeah.
So you can do anything else, but right. let's not go there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, as if you could change someone's heart. And I love what you were saying though. Like, if we could look at that in the way we raise our children, if we could look at that in the way that we do church, as in, this is not about me.
Mm-hmm.
This is not for me. Like, this is unto Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that would radically change the way we go to church. It would change how we serve. If you show up to church knowing, you know what, this isn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about me.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do today
yeah.
to make this about Christ? That means you have a heart of service. You are not caring if you get into the dang church and get to sit there for your 45 minutes while your kids get watched.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're not like, is this music ministering to me? Because I have a very specific musical taste.
Right.
And mm-hmm. this needs to really make me feel special.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, how can I make this better? How can I make this work? How can I serve them?
Mm-hmm.
And the same with our children. I mean, what happened in my marriage changed our finances. It changed the way we parent. It changed the way we do relationships with other people. It changed the way we do church. It changed everything. And I think that's because when the gospel takes root in your life, I feel like before I was just going around like, what's that game where you just like bop the alligator head?
Yeah,
Yeah, you're just bopping the things that pop up and it's exhausting and you're just trying to kill the next sin. And the gospel, when it takes root, it's unlike anything else because it changes everything. So you're not managing sin. You're being changed.
Mm.
I am not drawn to that sin anymore. And when I am drawn, there is a deep reckoning in my soul that says no.
Mm.
And, you know, that's what changes me. That's what makes me serve. I am serving unto the Lord. I'm not serving unto people. When you serve unto people, you're very disappointed
mm-hmm.
that people don't see what you're doing. They don't value
right.
what you're doing. Same with your children. You're doing that for your kids. Kids don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They are like, oh, that's so exciting that you stayed up all night. They don't care.
Yeah. And with our marriage, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, am I serving Aaron to make sure that I get what I want?
Right.
Or am I serving him or my children or my ministry or whatever?
Right.
To bring Jesus, to show Jesus.
Such a hard question to ask yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a hard question to sit in.
Yeah.
We all want to be like, of course not. Of course I'm serving the Lord.
Right. But then it seems like the litmus test of that would be, well, then when the shitstorm comes, then right. What?
Right. And not to say you need it all together to say like, okay, so when the storm comes, I'm going to be so rooted. For me, the storm came and that's how I became rooted.
But also, Jamie, you became rooted, but there was, when you talk about him bringing you into that like cliff area and the storm is there, I mean, you would not have recognized that's what God was doing to you. Without him revealing that to you, if that makes sense.
Oh, completely.
Like it would have just seemed like you've left me in the storm.
And I had to run into this random place and protect myself. Uh-huh.
But his grace, he revealed that to you. Like, no, this is me. I've been here all along. I'm here through all of this. This is actually for your good.
It was complete and utter kindness to me. Everything about what happened was his kindness, and I could not. I don't mind when people talk about they're angry at God. I'm like, God can handle that. Mm-hmm. I mean, whatever. That's nothing new. But it was hard for me to be angry with a God that was so clearly and made it so apparent. And you're right. Even you can't even see his goodness. Apart from him, we are literally nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't even see what he's doing. We can't even open our eyes. Mm-hmm. Even our will to be saved, God says, that was me.
That's me drawing you.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's basically like, there's nothing you can claim here on your own. Mm-hmm. And boy, that was just hard for me to believe and sometimes still is. But don't you need me a little bit? Mm-hmm. You know? Don't you need me a little bit to show my husband the gospel? Mm-hmm. So I stayed. So
hello, look at me. But when we get a grasp of how worthless we are without him, then in theory and in paper, when you're like, well, of course I can forgive my husband.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And it's supernatural work, but it doesn't mean that it's not devastating to walk through. It doesn't mean we were not in incredible amounts of therapy together, separately. And then, you know, then you go to these intensives, then we're going out of town. Then, I mean,
yeah,
that was our full-time job. Mm-hmm. People want to get through their craziness and their hardship and their suffering, and they want to do it alone because they don't want people to know what's going on. They want to still protect. Usually they're protecting the person that did the thing. You know, I don't want my husband to be embarrassed. When really you're just getting in the way of a work God is doing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, I don't think you can do that alone.
Yeah.
Ours happened super, super fast. I don't know why. I don't know why God chose the timing of my husband wasn't having an affair for very long. He got pulled out of his sin pretty quickly. We were separated for a short time. He came back repentant in that time. I don't know why God chose to bind up our wounds that quickly. All I do know is that he doesn't work in time. And even when I was going through forgiveness and healing, I had felt like God had stretched my days into years. Mm-hmm. I mean, I felt like we were doing that much work on the heart level that he had held the sun up for me every night and said, here's one more thing I want to do. Here's one more thing I want to do. We can't look at time and say, since this is my story, it should be your story too. And you should go through this that quickly. And if he's really repentant, it'll be this.
Right.
Quickly. You know, everyone's story is different. And ours was quicker. I say quick, but you know,
a year
of intense, whatever. And, but he changed us. Mm-hmm. And I had already had a platform before that a little bit, blogging, and remember that when that was before blogging? Yeah. We were like leaving comments on blog.
Yes.
That was a thing. You know, I'd already had a little bit of a platform just telling stupid stories about my family, and then God, even that was like, this isn't for you, you know? Like, I'm going to use your voice. The person who had no voice will now have a voice, but it's not going to be about you. It's going to be about me. And so that's what I do. That's what I talk about. If I do a conference, if I do MOPS, if I do whatever, it's not about marriage. It's about the gospel.
Love that so much. Hey guys, before we get back to the show with Jamie, I want to tell you about an organization that is sponsoring the show today. It's called Love With Food. LoveWithFood.com is the easiest way to snack smart and do good. Discover and try the best organic or all-natural snacks delivered to your door for as low as $10 a month membership fee. Gluten-free membership is also available. For every box sent, at least a meal is donated to feed hungry children in America. To date, Love With Food has donated more than 700,000 meals to feed hungry children. That is amazing. What are you gifting this holiday season? What about a gift that gives back? Love With Food snack subscription is a great way to try and discover new and all-natural snacks delivered to your door monthly. It's a great gift that keeps on giving. Use code LOVEJAMIE to save $5 on any subscription plans today. Go to lovewithfood.com. Why not gift Love With Food this holiday season? It's the gift that keeps on giving. Guys, I had one of these show up at my house when I was moving, and it was like my most favorite package ever. It was full of wonderful snacks that I got to try. And if you need a last-minute gift, what a great idea. Okay, go to lovewithfood.com. Use the code to save $5 on the subscription plan. All right, guys, back to the show with Jamie Nato. Okay, I'm going to end this marriage conversation with something you wrote on your blog 2 years ago. I'm going to read it, and I know that will make you cringe because that's like – here are my words out open. And then I want to talk to you about 3 things you're loving and what you're reading and all that kind of stuff. So you said this 2 years ago on your blog. Are you ready?
I'm so ready.
This is a letter you wrote to your sister before she got married.
Oh, gosh.
Ring a bell?
Okay. Yeah. No, I write things and I never sleep and I haven't slept for 10 years. So.
Okay, here we go. You said when things get difficult, really difficult, don't look inward. Don't believe in yourself. Don't wake up and try harder. The answer is not inside of you but outside of you. Simply ask God to show up and change your heart and mind. Ask Him to help you love your husband like He loves your husband. And when you do it all wrong, when you mess up bad and hurt your husband, when you act stupid and say things you shouldn't have said, know that God still loves you. He will not turn away from you. He knows all the worst things about you and still chooses you. That is how you love each other. Not tips on communication, not better sex, not more kids, not a bigger house, not a better job. You wake up and ask God to help you love a person that is sometimes unlovable because you recognize that you, too, are the very same. Good news for newlyweds who don't know what they're getting themselves into and they say, I do. None of us knew. Maybe God does that on purpose. Funny guy. That was a letter you wrote to your – part of a letter you wrote to your sister before she was getting married.
I needed to hear that.
And that is good marriage advice. You wake up every day and you love someone that is – even when they're unlovable because of how much God's loved you. Goodness. And that's a wrap, folks, right there.
Goodness. Do you remember – does it say what sister I wrote that to?
Yeah, let me look. It was a cute little wedding shower, and it says your baby sister's getting married in September.
Mags. You know, and the crazy thing about that is she's walking through a divorce.
Wow.
And she's young, and dang it, I think this is my second time crying, which I like to set records, so I hope that's a record on your show. Mm-hmm. Just a super rough, abusive situation. And you know, she can't love that man enough to make him change. And dang it, she tried so hard and has all the markings to prove it. But, you know, that's the thing about the gospel, and that's the thing about suffering. The gospel is good news. It's good news. It's not another brick in your backpack. And if Maggie were to say, I did all the things and I followed all the rules and it didn't work out for me. And if that was her gospel, then the failure would end up on her and it would be her fault. But it's not. That's the good news. You can't guarantee that your marriage is going to be amazing just because you're a believer. Just because you said, I do and I want to make this work. And, you know, suffering, you don't get to pick when it works out for you. So, you know, kind of walking through that, that is that's refreshing for me to hear that. And it's, you know what? I needed to hear that today. I'm so glad you pulled that up. That's exactly what I needed to hear as I walk through with her mm-hmm. what it means to love someone who is completely unlovable.
Yeah. Well, those are your words.
Well, they're his words. I think, you know, I wrote that all of my blogs are on 10 years of having a lot of babies, a lot of life transitions, a lot of suffering, and just, you know, getting on the internet and writing things down. And mm-hmm. and God used a very weak woman in a weak spot to preach the gospel. So I'm thankful for that. I don't even remember writing that. So
well, that's how God is. Jamie, thanks for being so open and vulnerable about your marriage.
Yeah.
And if I could be completely honest with you before we move on, I have checked out your stuff. I haven't been in depth too much, and I hope that you don't take this the wrong way at all.
Right.
When someone had said to me, which a handful of people, not just Shannon, a handful of people have said, you should have this woman on your show. Her and her husband walked through an affair. And then I went through your blog and checked it all out. And until today, I thought you were the one that had the affair.
Oh, really?
Because of how much you are vulnerable about what God did in your life through that.
I sort of love that.
I think that's sort of cool as well, is that God moved you so much, and it wasn't even you that made this big, bad, scary sin that we think is the worst.
Right. I love that so much.
That's how good God is.
Everyone thinks that.
Oh, okay. So, Jamie, tell me three things that you're loving right now that okay. you want to, like, text your girlfriend and be like, you need to know about this.
Okay. I am loving Home Fires on Masterpiece on PBS. Have you seen that?
No. I am. Is it like a old period piece show?
Yep.
I am not a fan. I cannot do it.
It's. Did you not like Downton Abbey either?
We watched maybe three or four episodes and couldn't do it.
You're a robot. That's okay. Somebody needed to tell you that. Well, for those of you who do kind of like period pieces.
Which a lot of people do, obviously. Hello.
Obs, because they're not robots.
Exactly.
It's called Home Fires. But here's what I love about it. It deals with a lot of women's issues. Women having a voice. Mm-hmm. Women trying to make a way in a man's world. And I have been dealing with that so much this year as I have started working again, trying to figure out where I fit in. And I feel like it's still a man's world, and that's like a whole nother thing for a whole nother time. But this show has just been so therapeutic for me. It's the same. I feel so like, okay, I'm not the only one. Women have been struggling through this for a long time.
Right.
And it's just so good. It's very well done. Home Fires. So good.
Okay. Home Fires. Number two,
let's see. You didn't give me like a warning on this. I don't have a list. Okay, 1989 by Ryan Adams. Ryan.
I got it. Yep.
He covers, what's her name?
Taylor
Swift's album from front to back, but it's in his voice and style, and it is changing my life.
I've heard amazing things about it.
I mean, you're welcome mm-hmm. for today. You're going to download it and be like, my life has changed.
It's amazing.
Jamie Nato, the gospel and Ryan Adams together cannot be stopped. It's so good. And then it makes me like think how good of a songwriter Taylor Swift is. I mean, I love pop music.
Yeah.
And I always hear like, I love to find like the gospel in pop music and all this stuff because that's weird and fun for me. But it makes me love Taylor Swift as a songwriter, and I've never seen her as a songwriter.
She's a great songwriter.
I just needed to hear it in a different way.
Voice, yeah.
Yeah, and so.
You know what you should do? You should do like a blog series about the gospel in Taylor Swift songs.
I have a hashtag called Let's Get Crazy, and I just listen to the radio, and sometimes I'll write it on my chalkboard like a lyric that I love. And
what's it called? Let's get crazy.
It's so nerdy. I haven't done it in a long time, but I used to do it like every week. I would listen to lyrics, and then we did like a thing where everyone did it and they wrote it on the chalkboard. And
how do you spell crazy?
let's get crazy. It's super fun.
And how do you spell crazy though?
Well, praise E with a Y.
With a Y, okay.
E-R-A-I-S-E-Y. E-Y, I think, or Y. I don't know. Just, you know, search for it. And the Lord will minister to
you. I love that.
I'm a nerd in that sometimes I hear pop music and I start crying in the car. And it's like a love song to, you know, some girl. And I think, no, that's Jesus. It's so nerdy. It's so terrible.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you how I am totally like, just like tear the gospel apart. Is my husband writes worship music. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish he was singing that about me. Yeah. He's singing it about Jesus. Oh my gosh. I'm sure that God is like, you are like sacrilegious right now. Your husband wrote a song about Jesus and you are acting like that's about you. Hello, something's wrong with me.
Okay,
your third thing you're loving.
And this is like random. I'm like looking around at my room right now and trying to find the third thing. But I think it will be the plaid movement.
Oh, I have one plaid thing.
That's not okay. I feel like you need at least 5 to 7 plaid shirts. I can't stop buying plaid shirts.
Really?
It's become a problem. Like my husband's like, hey, I see that you like plaid.
You are on the movement.
But you shouldn't buy a, you know, what do you call those? A rolling pin that's plaid because it's at Target. You know, he's like, I don't know. I feel like that's too far.
That is hilarious.
Oh, is it? Because, yeah, so I have a million plaid shirts. I love them. They go with everything. You know, they're like, it's a button up. So you're like, yeah. I'm amazing and skinny right now. Right? It doesn't matter. You know?
I've been following this new Instagram account called Gray Monroe.
Ooh, what is that?
She sells clothes. So it's like a boutique.
Yeah.
You can just buy it online or whatever. And I'm looking at it right now. And you know what? It's just full of plaids.
Yeah. Because it's so good.
Yes. There's this like plaid cardigan that I really, really, really want with elbow patches.
Ooh.
I know. I'm going to have to buy myself that today.
You're going to have to think, pray about that fast. I will. Fast in between snack and lunch.
And then see what I come up with.
And see what the Lord is saying about that purchase.
Okay. I love your three things. Are you a reader?
I want to be a reader, but I'll tell you, in these 10 years, it's been a dry run. I can tell you, Danny and the Dinosaur has been pivotal in these last. Clifford,
love
crazy
it.
Gospel implications.
Love it.
I am reading right now. I'm reading Brené Brown's Rising Strong.
Yes.
And by reading, I mean audiobook, listening in the bathtub.
Oh, Audible's the best.
Audible for president.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's been so, so, so good. You know Brené. Everybody loves Brené.
Yes, so good. I recently was listening to her on a podcast, and I'm like, oh, this is such good stuff. I just want to take notes on everything.
It's so good.
Yeah, so wonderful. Okay, I love everything about you, Jamie Nadeau. I'm so glad we met today.
Now we're going to be BFFs.
Yep.
I'll send you a simple, you know, BFF necklace. Sometime soon.
Like half of it though?
Yeah, like the yin or the yang.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I know which one you prefer, but that might have got weird right there. But maybe more of a maybe more of the words, like best friend. I don't know.
Okay,
but
okay. Well, this is random. This show, I mean, I'm so far ahead of my life here, which is crazy, is not coming out to the end of December. So people are listening to this and they're like on their way to their in-laws for Christmas, or they're on their way to Crazy Aunt Martha's house or whatever they're doing.
Is this like after Christmas?
No, it's before.
Okay. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Just so thankful I could share this sojourn of you dreading getting into your in-law's house right now.
Do y'all have a Christmas tradition that's like your thing?
I do. We do. Well, I love kind of, you know, you pull things from your childhood that you loved, mm-hmm. and or you make your new things. And I grew up in a gigantic family, so there's 8 of us kids.
Are you kidding me?
No, I know. And we're not Mormon or Catholic, but whatever.
Wow.
That's the second question. So my mom was just trying to, you know, like, we just got to get through this.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some traditions, but they're very few. But one thing that we do that's our thing is we get a real Christmas tree every year and we cut the bottom off, you know, so you have like discs and we write the year on it. Oh. And I sometimes write on the back of it kind of what's going on. Uh-huh. So new baby or what, that's a lot of them. It's like, yeah. Baby coming soon. Yeah, I was like pregnant for 10 years.
Yeah.
And I love those discs. We stack them up tall and it just, of course, I've already cried 2 times, so I'm not going to do it again. But I cry every time we pull those discs out. The stack is high now because there's 10 Christmases that we've had together.
Yeah.
And it's funny, though, those lean years where it was hard and it was rough, they are skinny little, because, you know, we got the tiniest little Charlie Brown tree, because uh-huh. That's what we could afford.
Right.
And they're the skinniest little discs. And they're right there kind of on the front end. But the stacks are high. And I think we don't deserve any of these years together. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't. So I love pulling those out. I love the story that we'll be able to tell our kiddos when they're old enough to understand what that means for our family, you know?
That's really cool. Can I ask a really stupid question?
Yeah.
When you cut off the tree part of the bottom.
Right.
It just stays like that forever?
Well, maybe you're supposed to like seal it or
what's
something.
That's what I'm asking. Have you noticed any I mean, they look well. I mean, this is a great idea. So I want people to be prepared. No,
it doesn't. They have remained amazing.
Okay.
I'm sure you could seal them or shellac them or something.
This is a Pinterest moment. Where do you display them?
Well, it just depends. You know, you could put them in like a glass, you know, those giant glass orbs or whatever. But my kids break everything. So like nothing's sacred. So we don't have glass orbs anywhere.
Right.
There's no like apothecary beautiful situations here. But yeah. I put them on the mantle usually. I stack them tall. Okay. I'm just proud of them. I like love what God's done.
It's like your little Ebenezer moment. Like, look at where we've been. Yeah.
It really, and it's a conversation starter too. I mean, we moved out to the suburbs from the city this year, which is like, I feel like opposite of cool right now, but I felt like God called us out here, which is funny. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And God is super hilarious. And a lot of our friends are not believers. And so we use our marriage story a lot of times to as kind of an avenue to let people know that we are super messed up, but look what God has done.
Right.
We tell anybody who will listen to that story because we just feel like God parted the waters and he made this miracle and we can't shut up about it.
So, love it so much. It's just the best.
Starter.
Yes. Jamie, thanks so much for joining me. I hope you have a good Christmas.
And you too. I hope you all your dreams come true. And
I want to see a picture of your trees, stem, tree. What do you call them?
I know they're like stumps.
Stumps. I want to see a picture of your tree stumps.
I'm gonna text you a picture.
Which, think about this too, Jamie. This is like the part that people would cut off and throw away because it might seem like something that's not needed. And you're saying, no, we're going to hold this and claim it, and it's Jesus.
It's such a good reminder in a world that we live in that's so, you see a visual and then you throw it away.
Yeah.
I mean, so quick. And just to have something that is tangible, we can look at, we have to remember it every Christmas, which is shockingly, surprise, God.
Hello, birth of Jesus.
But everything happened in the winter.
Huh.
So, that the holidays, that was
a hard time.
A hard time for us. And now I pull it out every Christmas and say, look what he's done.
It's redeemed. It is no longer a hard time. Okay, before this airs, I expect to see some Let's Get Crazy tweets.
Oh, it's going to happen.
So that I want to join in on this craziness.
Well, you will. Just know that some people get irritated. They don't like that you would take something secular or...
Oh, please. No.
So get ready for those fun emails. But
we don't have time for that.
I don't have any time for that.
Nope.
Like, well, then don't follow me.
There you go.
Constantly.
Unfollow.
That's why I teach us, okay? Don't follow me. If that's going to irritate you, just know that.
Jamie, thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Thanks for having me. It was so fun.
Great, great. And thanks for downloading Skype for me.
Yeah, I feel like that was an old lady moment. I was like, what? I had to download Skype? And I was like a monkey.
Welcome to 2015.
I was trying to internet, and I did it, though.
Okay, thank you for coming on the happy hour.
See ya.
Guys, I love that show with Jamie Nado. Seriously, I got off recording that with her and I thought, this girl has so much wisdom and I just wanted to listen to it again. I hope and pray that you enjoyed it as much as I did. I'd love to hear from you about it. Jamie would love to hear from you about it. Find us on Instagram or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. Guys, I want to remind you about a place that you can get books. Lots and lots of books. I made a goal this year to read 36 books, and I'm about to finish strong with a children's book because of Winn-Dixie. I picked it up out of my kids' room because I needed one more book to finish off my goal of 36 books this year. If you want to read books, great books in 2016, then check out jamieivy.com/happyhourbooks. And what you're going to find there is every book that we've ever talked about on the happy hour. Have you listened to a show and you heard us talk about a book that we love? It's there. Have you listened to a show and there was an author? Their book is there. jamieivy.com/happyhourbooks will help you find all your books for this next year. Remember, everything we chatted about will be up on my website, jamieivy.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Today's show is edited by Knox McCoy of The Popcast, and the music is from Austin Stone Worship's A Day of Glory Christmas album that you can find on iTunes. Next week, my guest is Mandy Rose. Guys, enjoy your week. Share the show with a girlfriend and have a happy hour with a friend. See you next week, guys, with Mandy Rose.